All right. Well, hey, we are moving right along with our Slow Church series. Hard to believe. Next week is the end of it. I feel like we were just starting it in September, and here we are towards the end of November. I think it's like week 11 or something, week 10, week 11. And we've really covered quite a bit of ground, have we not, over the past couple of weeks. And hopefully this book, this series, has been something that has challenged your view of church and given you some new insights about what the church is, why we exist, what we're doing here, and then specifically for us here at Awaken, what we are doing, our vision, and why we are so into this whole slow movement. Because when you're moving so fast, there's so much that you miss in life. So just because we end the Slow Church series doesn't mean that we're going to start speeding up, because that's normally what happens in Christmas. So no, I did not plan to end Slow Church right before the Advent season. We're going to keep things going slow, hopefully, so we can experience the richness. Yes, thank you. So we can experience the richness of Advent and all that it means for us. Now today, as we get started, I want to do a recap from last week, because I gave you all a homework assignment last week. So hopefully you all did your homework, and maybe I should have had stickers that I could hand out afterwards. Last week we talked about the theme of gratitude, and I gave five different ways to practice gratitude. One was to keep a daily record, a daily journal, whether it was in the morning, in the evening, just all the things that you were thankful for that particular day. Gratigraphs, writing a note, a handwritten letter, or hand it off to someone, just why you're grateful for them, why you're thankful that they're in your life. Or worship, or celebration, throw a big party, or to celebrate Eucharist. Did you celebrate Eucharist Wednesday night? Oh, man, it could have been a slam dunk for this. Did a little bit of worship. All right, cool. Well, how did that go?
It went well.
Yeah? The tree's right over here.
Oh, all right. I can't see it with the pole. But he brought this guitar and we did a little bit of a worship song before our discussion. It was really good.
Nice. Awesome. Cool. So that was kind of a different element for Wednesday night.
Yep.
All right. And it kind of changed the dynamics at all, or just kind of was nice to put something else in play there? Yeah. Awesome. All right. I like it. What else? What else did we practice this week? How do we practice gratitude? Or did we have like a sixth idea? Choose your own? Okay. I see a hand in the crowd.
I like the letter writing. I think maybe because of everything is so technology, you know, and a lot of people I don't think do the handwritten letters so much anymore, so I did that, and I may continue that over, you know, over the holidays to some neighbors, and, you know, I wrote just one.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Nice. How's your penmanship?
Oh, good.
Like you say, we're not used to writing. I start writing, and I'm like, oh my gosh, can anyone read this? That's cool. I like it. Anything else we want to talk about gratitude? All right, so let's move on to today's topic, which is hospitality. And we'll begin with a parable. This is, I believe, Matthew 25. Where are we at? What verse? Keep going, one or two. Yeah, it's a long parable. One more slide. There we go. Matthew 25, starting in verse 31. And this might be a familiar parable for you. So Jesus is teaching, and here's a story, a parable that he offers to those listening. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he'll separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. So on one side there'll be the sheep, the other side there'll be the goats. Sorry, I don't mean anything by it. You just happen to be on, maybe you guys, you know, subconsciously chose a side this morning, a different side. Maybe there was something going on in the air. So he'll put the sheep. Oh, wait, the sheep will be on my right. The goats will be on my left. So, okay, sorry, we'll flip it around. Sheep, goats. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. You brought me McDonald's. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison. What a great verse for us this morning in speaking about Angel Tree. That wasn't planned. But I was in prison. You came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? And the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he'll say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. And they also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or needing clothes, or sick, or in prison, and did not help you? And he will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. That's a pretty sobering parable, is it not? We can go to the next slide here. Let's talk a bit about this parable. So what Jesus is saying here, and oftentimes what happens is when this is interpreted, this parable is looked at, it's interpreted as something that is in the future. Something that's going to be for some far off time and place. But what Jesus is saying is what you do with your life right here, right now, matters. He's not talking about some far-off moment in history. He's talking about, hey, what you're doing with your life right now, how you live your life, how you treat people right here, right now, it has long-lasting, shall we say, eternal implications. The way that you interact with others, it's not just this momentary time in history, but rather it's something that has long-lasting, eternal implications. And this actually, it was an important passage for the earliest Christians. This parable showed up in the earliest Christian documents time and time again. This was a parable that, I mean, when you sit with this, and think about us sitting with it, and even just reading it now or reading it this week, I mean, this really gets you, does it not? Like, when did we see you hungry? Well, whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me. There's plenty of people around us in our world that are in need. And do we just turn a blind eye to the needs that exist all around us? Or do we offer abundantly from that which we've been blessed with, from what we've been given? And so the earliest Christians, they picked up on this and they're like, ooh, there's something to this parable. There's something about how we live, how we treat others, especially those in need, that has consequences that far outlast this moment in history. And here actually is how the Romans viewed the Christians a couple years, or about 300 years after the time of Jesus. Here's what the Romans had to say about the Christians. This is the Emperor Julian to his high priest, so to his religious official in the year 362 Common Era. He says, why do we not observe that it is their benevolence to strangers? Speaking about Christians, remember, the parable we just read was one of the most important stories or documents for the earliest Christians. It's what it meant to be a follower of Jesus for them. That's why they brought it up time and time again. They placed a lot of weight and emphasis on this. And the Romans, the emperor, he's noticing this, that they didn't just read the story, they didn't memorize it, they didn't memorize the verses, but they actually lived it out. It wasn't just simply a bumper sticker. It wasn't a plaque that they carried around with them or a little verse that they had in their wallet. It was actually a guiding light, like a north star for how they were living their lives. So why do we not observe? It's their benevolence to strangers, their care for the graves of the dead and the pretended holiness of their lives. Pretended, not just like fake, you know, hypocritical, but he obviously spoke a bit different. Holiness of their lives that have done the most to increase atheism. Now, at first glance, you're like, wait a second, I thought we were talking about Jesus and being a Christian. How did atheism get in here? Well, the first Christians were considered atheists. So if anyone were to ask you, hey, what's your belief system? I'm an atheist. because the first Christians, they only worshipped one God, which was extremely odd for the Romans because they had a whole pantheon of gods that they worship. So for the Christians to say, no, we're not going to recognize those other gods. We're going to simply worship one God. To the Romans, they were considered atheists because they disregarded all the other gods. So what has increased atheism or the religion of Jesus? Well, it's their benevolence to strangers, how they're treating other people. And then here's this. This is great. It's disgraceful that when no Jew ever has to beg, and the impious Galileans, the Christians, support not only their own poor, but ours as well. All men see that people lack aid from us. Isn't that great? The government. They're like, hey, people are lacking aid from the government. It's the Christians who are actually giving to the poor. It's the Christians who are coming alongside those in need. And it's because of this, because of their great love for other people, that more and more people are being swept up into this. Imagine if that's how Christians were looked at and viewed today in our world. When you think about a Christian and how the rest of the world views Christians, it's not oftentimes through this lens, is it? See, what I find really interesting, we go to the next slide, is that what spread atheism or what spread the Christian faith wasn't intellect. It wasn't debating other people. I mean, how often do you see, well, there's going to be a Christian and an atheist, which, I mean, the two kind of go hand in hand, do they not? we're going to have a debate between someone who's going to prove God and someone who's going to prove that God doesn't exist. Yeah, it wasn't through debating. It wasn't through having some great intellectual argument that people became Christians. It wasn't in arguing your point, especially on Facebook or Instagram, TikTok, whatever your preferred method of social media happens. It wasn't sitting there behind your computer like furiously typing out, no, you're wrong. Let me give you a Bible verse to support this. No. None of that. It wasn't improving. It wasn't having a megaphone, being in a subway and yelling at other people or telling other people, you're wrong and here's how it should be. It was in action. Lived life. It was in hospitality. Giving generously. And not only to the people within the group, notice that, like they took care of the poor within their own group, and we've seen many other cases, beginning of Acts, it talks about there was no one poor in their community. They didn't just take care of the people in their group, but the abundance spread, the generosity spread beyond their group to everyone who was in need. As Jesus says in his parable, to the least of the, hey, there's someone who can't afford clothing, great, okay, let's go. Take them to buy some clothes. There's someone who's in jail, someone who's sick. Let's go visit them. Let's show them that they're not forgotten. Even though no one has visited them in 6 years, 7 years, however many months it might be, let's go visit them to let them know that they're loved and they're not abandoned by God. There's a song I remember from high school, The Hands and Feet of Jesus. It's being the hands and feet of Jesus. It's going and it's sharing love with other people. And that is, from the very beginning, the number one thing that spread the Christian faith. It was love. Let's go to the next slide. So it was, I guess, a question, but more of a rhetorical question because we just talked about this. But how do you think people felt then when they encountered a Christian? One of the least of these, someone who is in need, when they encountered a Christian, how do you think they felt? Let's do audience participation. Let's do it here. Forget the rhetorical question. So how do you think people felt when they, I'm feeling in a good mood today. Actually, I woke up at 5:30 this morning, and I was like, ooh, okay, I'm going to get some time, put some coffee on, I'll do some reading this morning. Within 10 minutes, I had just poured the coffee into the water into the coffee pot. I hear Reese screaming my name throughout the entire house, which woke Kit up. So about 5:45, all three of us were up. And I didn't have that quiet time in the morning, so but it's all good. And Steph's sick, so we just let her sleep. We went and we actually watched cartoons this morning, drank some coffee, and it's been a good morning. So how do you think people felt when they encountered a Christian? I think, Sophia, you're going to say something, right? I saw you before. Yeah. Curious, yeah. Like, why are they doing this? That's our skeptical culture, right? Where someone does something for us out of the goodness of their heart, and we're like, wait, hold on a second here. What's wrong? Did I win the lottery? Like, what happened here? Yeah, so they're probably curious. Like, what is motivating? What's compelling them to live? We see other people don't live like this, so what's compelling them to actually live this way? And I think that's probably, that's a great... Yeah, they were persecuted. Christians were persecuted, but they didn't allow that to become bitter. They still kept their hearts soft, and they said, well, we're still going to give back. Even though we're being persecuted, and because other people are treating us a certain way, we're not going to return in kind. We're going to actually still exemplify the love of Jesus for other people. And that's a really, I love that. Why do you think people became swept up in the atheist movement or the movement of the Christian faith? Well, because they were like, whoa, there's something to this. There's something, I see their hearts growing bigger. Yeah. What else? Welcomed. Totally. Right? Imagine if you are an outcast. You're one of the least of these. You're someone, we walk through Manhattan and sometimes we see people who are down and out and we try to look the other way across the sidewalk. We try to just pass by as quickly. So imagine someone comes alongside and offers, hey, here's a meal. Here's a warm meal. Here's some clothing. Wow, they're welcoming me. Other people just kind of walk by me. They push me to the side, and now all of a sudden, I'm feeling welcomed. That's a great feeling, is it not? How else? Maybe we could say loved, valued, like they matter. Going along with the welcome, they were seen, like they were noticed. How often do we go through life and are there times when we just don't feel like we're noticed by anyone? We feel like we're off the radar. And then someone sees us. Someone has a conversation with us. Someone notices us and it's like, all right, you begin to walk a little taller, walk a little, yeah, I'm not forgotten. I'm not unseen. Yeah, so when people came across a Christian and they were treated this way, they actually value me for who I am. We often in our culture, we value people for what they've done, their accomplishments. But what if we valued people simply because they were human? Because they exist, because they're breathing. That changes the game, does it not? We can go to the next slide. And this was in Slow Church during this chapter for this week. Hospitality, it's often become a professional industry in our culture. You have the hospitality industry, and you can be trained in this industry. I knew people that, what's your major in college? Hospitality. So what happened is we took hospitality, which is something that we can all do, and we've made it into a professional. Well, hospitality is for the people who are professionals. Or here's another thing I often hear. Hospitality is for the people who have the gift of hospitality, because it's a spiritual gift. And because those four people over there have the spiritual gift of hospitality, that gets me off the hook. And now, look, I get it. There's people who do have the gift of hospitality. Of course. It's the people that invite you to their home and make you a meal, and they love doing it. It energizes them. But it doesn't mean that we're then off the hook. There's all different ways that we can practice hospitality. A conversation, welcoming someone is an act of hospitality. Handing out a meal, visiting someone who is sick, giving a handwritten note, a gratigraph, like what Laura just did this week, what she mentioned this week, that's an act of hospitality in itself. So there's varying degrees of it, and it all falls under one umbrella, but we're not off the hook. Hospitality is something that we can all do. And what happens is we make it about the professionals or those with the spiritual gift, and then there's the rest of us. And we don't have to worry about it. But we read this parable and we realize, as followers of Jesus, we are all meant to be people who practice hospitality. Now, sure, it's going to look different for all of us. That's fine. Find your groove. Find what works for you. And work within your own boundaries as well. There's some people that, my goodness, I don't know how they do it. They're like the Energizer Bunny of hospitality and giving. They just go and go and go, and it energizes them, and I'm just tired looking at them. So we all have different capacities. That's fine. You find what works for you, but it doesn't take you, it doesn't remove you from caring for the people around you. We are all called, as followers of Jesus, it's what we're all called to do, to show love to all people, so that when other people see us, they're curious. Huh, that's weird. I wasn't treated like that by other people over here? Why are they treating me differently? And then this is great. The great thing about the parable, what Jesus is saying here when he's separating the sheep and the goats and they're saying, well, we never saw you hungry. When did we do this? What Jesus is saying is how we treat others. We can go back one slide, sorry. How we treat others, it really shows how we treat Jesus. I mean, that's a scary thought, is it not? I mean, think about all the different interactions you've had this week. And imagine you were interacting with, replace the person you were interacting with Jesus. Now think about those interactions. Would that change how we view other people? Would it change the things that we say to other people? If we viewed everyone as a representative of Jesus, would that change how we treated the people we come across on a daily basis? I mean, that's a pretty deep question, is it not? I mean, that changes things for me. It's not just some random person. Rather, how we're interacting, well, it's a representative of Jesus. There's the image of God. There's something of Jesus in that person that we are talking with, that we're coming across. Every single person. And Jesus says, well, especially even the least of these, those that society likes to cast to the side. Let's go to the next one. And a little more audience participation. It just kind of felt like that morning for us. So if we were to stop and think about who are the least of these in our society today, what would you say? Who are the least of these in our society today? Refugees? The homeless? Sorry? The elderly? Yep. Anyone with a mental illness, alcohol, drug abuse. Yep. Disability. An alternative lifestyle. Yeah. I mean, I'd even go so far as to say people who, you know, you mentioned an alternative lifestyle, and that's a very broad picture right there. We could talk about sexuality. We could talk about political views. We could talk about all sorts of different things. And sometimes we look at other people and, whoo, I'm not going to treat, they don't believe the same way as me. So they're not deserving of me treating them in a way that holds them in high regard. Yeah, we look at other people and we're like, oh my goodness, look at them. Look at what they're doing. Look at their life. I'm a Christian. I don't do that kind of a thing. I don't believe that way. So forget them. I'm going to cast them, and we're basically just now saying, "Well, they don't matter. They don't hold any value." It's the people that we would normally cast to the side, and I think all those examples and more, those are the people that we are to treat with love. Let's go one more slide. So a couple of years ago, I forget how long it was, World Vision, which is an organization that sponsors children in need around the world, they had originally defined whoever's on staff, we make sure, we vet our staff to make sure that there is fidelity within the marriage. And what they did is a couple years back, they said that can include a straight marriage, or it can also include a same-sex marriage as well. And some people were furious. Some of the people who sponsored children, when they heard this, World Vision, why are they condoning same-sex marriage? They're saying, well, as long as there's fidelity within a same-sex marriage, that's okay for our staff members. Within 4 days of announcing this, 10,000 children were dropped. 10,000 sponsorships, all because people disagreed with the stance that World Vision was taking. And so they flip-flopped. They changed. They said, no, okay, it's not going to be, we are not going to have any staff anymore who are involved in a same-sex marriage. Because 10,000 children who are in need around the world were no longer being sponsored. This is what happens when we lose the art of hospitality, when we lose the practice of hospitality. We use other people as leverage to get what we want. And it's sickening. It's saddening. We're not going to always agree with other people. That's just the nature of life. We're not going to all agree with other Christians. People hold differing views. But when we stop loving each other, and when we stop extending grace and the love of Jesus to other people, Others get hurt. 10,000 children. Who knows what happened to them? Were their sponsorships picked back up? I don't know what happened to these children. But the fact that 10,000 children around the world and their families, who they relied on having the financial support of other people for food, education, shelter, healthcare, some of the basic needs, clean water, when they no longer had access to that because 10,000 people said, you know what, forget about it. We don't like their stance, and so we're going to just leave these children, the least of these, we're going to leave them hanging. People get hurt. And the love of Jesus is not seen. We are to be people who extend love to everyone, even when we disagree. Because in doing so, we ensure that all people then have the basic needs, their basic needs met in life, and have all the things that they need in order to survive in life. That's what Jesus is talking about, creating a society where all people are cared for. Where, yes, we might disagree, but we're going to still show love through it. We're still going to give to the least of these. We're still going to support those in need around us. Let's flip one more slide. I know we're running out of time. So the question for us is, well, what does this mean for us? I mentioned earlier we all have different capacities. What does it mean for us right now? How do we practice hospitality? Is there one thing that we can do this week, this holiday season, to practice hospitality? Whether it's just changing our mindset, and in every single person that we come across this week, we think, okay, I'm interacting with Jesus. I'm having a conversation with Jesus. I'm going to show love. I'm going to make it a point to show love and to extend grace. Is it inviting someone into your home? Is it visiting someone in jail? Is it sponsoring a child through Angel Tree? Is it writing a handwritten note? How can we practice hospitality this week and then this holiday season? So we're out of time. We don't have time for a Q&A today because they're going to have an event here. But that's the question I want to leave you with this morning. What does this mean for you? Take some time, sit with it this week. Maybe we'll do a recap next week as well. But what does it mean for you to practice the art of hospitality this week? God, we come to you this morning. And God, we read this parable of the sheep and the goats, and it's a sobering parable. God, it's a parable that hits us deep. God, it reminds us that what you desire from us is not just the right belief system, but the actions that support the things that we believe. God, actions that support the love and the grace that you have freely bestowed upon each of us. I would argue that love and showing grace to others is at the heart of what it means to follow Jesus. And so, God, I pray that for us this week and over the next couple of weeks and through the months, the years that follow, I pray that we would be people of hospitality. Show us what it means for us. Show us specifically how we can practice hospitality so that when others interact with us, they would feel your love. They would feel your grace. And just like hundreds of years ago in the Roman society, God, as people were swept up into the Christian faith because of how they were treated, I pray that the same would happen for us today through Awaken and through the entire global Christian community. That Christians would be known for their love, for their support of others in need. God, that we wouldn't use others as leverage to get what we want, to prove a point, but that we would be people of generosity. God, we would be people of grace, of giving out of the abundance of all the blessings that we've received. So may we not treat anyone this week, may we not look at anyone this week in a way that devalues, but may we see Jesus in every single person we interact with this week. We ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen.